We now have the privilege of hearing a second capstone presentation of the morning, presented by Nick Meyer. Nick is from Kidron, Ohio, and came to study at EMU in 2005. After graduating from EMU in 2008, he worked full-time for the EMU Phys Plant on the grounds crew for 5 years, where he continues to work part-time, and I think some of his cohort there is here with us. Great to have you. Nick is married to Sylvia Hooley Meyer, who loves teaching and has taught ESL in a variety of settings. They find themselves at home in Harrisonburg and enjoy taking advantage of the wonderful hiking and camping in the Shenandoah Valley. They have been members of Early Church since 2008, and there are a number of Early Church folk here supporting you as well. Early Church is a small Mennonite congregation here in Harrisonburg, where Nick has been in a lay leadership role for several years. Nick loves bicycles, coffee, gardening, and spending time with friends and family. After graduation, he looks forward to being more involved in the church and broader community, possibly as a volunteer chaplain in the local jail. Nick's presentation is entitled "Hatred or Forgiveness? Must We Choose?" Nick.
Good morning, everybody. The much-awaited moment of the delivery of the senior capstone. Here we are. My goodness. I'm so glad to be on the first day, and I can just sort of cruise through the rest of the semester. So the title of my presentation is "Hatred or Forgiveness? Must We Choose?" For the past year and a half, I have been stuck in hatred and unforgiveness. In a situation close to me, someone I love was being harmed in a variety of ongoing ways, and the harm was serious, and the perpetrator had no intention of stopping. In God's mercy, the situation eventually de-escalated and came to an end, but many people were left with a lot of pain and a lot of confusion and a lot of hatred. This experience has had a way of tuning me into the experiences of many other victims. People are victimized and harmed in a variety of ways, and as in our situation, so often the perpetrators are never apologetic. They never own up to the many ways they've been harmful. And so, for my capstone, I've set out on a journey to understand forgiveness without an apology, without acknowledgement. How do we forgive when there's no recognition of the ways we've been harmed? How do we live with the challenge to forgive those who have trespassed against us? How do we love these, our enemies, who have harmed us and maybe continue seeking our harm? I've always understood enemy love as one of the most essential and probably one of the most difficult aspects of our call as Christians. We try to be prepared for what enemy love might require of us. The legacy of the martyrs, the Lord's Prayer, the Sermon on the Mount, these are instructive for us as we hope to be faithful to the call of enemy love. And I understand our call to love our enemies as a sign of our own reconciliation with God. While we were still enemies, God reconciled with us and made it possible for us to be in relationship with him. And our effort to be in relationship with people who have harmed us, to reconcile, that is a display of our own reconciliation with God. So this call is super important to me. It's a part of my DNA. So why then have I struggled so much with enemy love, with unforgiveness, and with hatred? So this is a story of trying to answer these questions. In my naivete, I thought I could maybe find a book or a series of processes, a linear process of forgiveness. You'd get there after doing some work, and then you could be done. You could set aside this unresolved hatred and unforgiveness, and you'd be there. And I now realize I was rather ill-prepared to forgive in a situation as serious as the one that we've experienced. I'm beginning to understand why forgiveness is known as the F word for victims of serious harm. Forgiveness is often thought of as a simplistic forgive and forget, and that works a lot of times in our common day-to-day. We bump up against each other and step on toes, and you just got to forgive and forget and move on. Yeah, time heals all wounds. But it doesn't really when things are more intense and more serious. Forgive and forget does violence to victims' experiences of harm and loss. Forgive and forget fails to hold perpetrators accountable for their actions. I needed something broader and deeper than this. As I reflect on the past year of my journey, there are two important landmarks that I want to share with you and reflect on a little bit today. The first is a significant encounter with the Psalms, particularly Psalm 109. Psalm 109 is known as a hate psalm. For the past several years, one of my most important regular practices has just been a daily reading of the Psalms. I'm beginning to understand the adage, you've probably heard it, in the Bible, God speaks to us. In the Psalms, the Bible speaks for us. I've become increasingly familiar with these ancient prayers and begun to really appreciate and resonate with the way they just really do capture our full range of experiences as humans. Surprise at God's patient forgiveness, the pain of betrayal, terror, abounding love, bewilderment, confusion, awe, doubt, anger, and yes, hatred. About a year ago, there was a defining moment in the situation. I'm sorry for being vague. It's you probably are curious. I struggle a lot with how vulnerable and how much to share, so I am being vague on purpose. So there was a moment when everything sort of came to a head and burst open, and it was the most difficult, most painful hour of my life. I don't know if you've ever had a Psalm 6 night. Psalm 6:6 says, "All night long I flood my bed with my tears, I wet my couch with my weeping." So I had one of these nights. I was absolutely heartbroken, absolutely devastated. And in the providence of God, the next morning, where I'd left off reading the Psalms, the next morning happened to be Psalm 109. And I don't know if you're familiar with Psalm 109. I'm going to read a bit in a moment, but I was absolutely astounded by what I read. Never has any piece of literature, art, poetry, music, anything ever spoken for me so accurately, so deeply as Psalm 109 did in that hour. It just resonated in my soul, and it troubled me a little bit. And you'll understand why. Psalm 109 it begins with the psalmist professing this deep and profound love in God's steadfast love, and very quickly moves to naming this. There's a person that has it in for him. He's being accused falsely of something, and so the psalmist begins to tell God about what he would like to see happen to his enemy. So from Psalm 109, "May his days be few. May another take his place of leadership. May his children become fatherless and his wife a widow. May his children become wandering beggars, driven from their ruined homes. May a creditor seize all he has and strangers plunder the fruit of his labor. May no one extend kindness to him or take pity on his fatherless children. May his descendants be cut off, their names blotted out from the next generation. May the iniquity of his fathers be remembered before the Lord. May the sin of his mother never be blotted out. May their sins always remain before you, Lord, that you may blot their names out from the earth. For he never thought of doing kindness, but hounded to death the poor and the needy and the brokenhearted. He loved to pronounce a curse. May it come back on him. He found no pleasure in blessing. May blessing be far from him. He wore cursing as his garment. May curses be like a cloak wrapped around his waist, like a belt tied around him forever." Wow. Are we allowed to pray that way? It certainly doesn't feel consistent with enemy love. It doesn't feel like blessing those who have cursed me. But somehow in that morning, after the Psalm 6 night, after the night of tears, I found myself in good company with this psalmist. Here was someone who loved God and trusted God's steadfast love and was begging God for their enemy's life to come to ruin. This captured so much of what I was feeling in these hours. I'd definitely read the psalm dozens of times in the past before this moment, and I think I was probably always a little bit embarrassed by the violent imagery, and you know, it's very non-Christian, right? These are not Christ-like feelings to have towards people. So it's hard to reconcile with enemy love, and it was troubling to be praying this way towards someone who I knew I was supposed to love. But it also came as a profound gift. Since encountering this psalm, I've come to understand what was happening for me, why that psalm met me as a gift. Walter Brueggemann helped me understand what was going on. He says the psalms indeed are a gift for those who have been victims. He says there are three options for people who have been victimized and with a desire for vengeance. They can act it out. They can act out in retaliation and violence and act these feelings that they have. They could act out that prayer if they'd want to. They can suppress and deny their feelings, which, of course, we know if you suppress bitterness and hatred, it reemerges in psychosomatic illnesses and fractured relationships and spiritual numbing and all kind of things. So we don't want to numb it. We don't want to deny it. The third option, we can cry out and lament before our God. And I think that's what the gift of this psalm was for me in that moment. It helped me to remember that God is, in fact, very real and present to us in our uncensored prayers. If we can't complain and lament and rage before God, we're left with two bad alternatives: denying these things or acting them out. So Brueggemann was helping me understand what was going on for me as I discovered Psalm 109. He calls it hatred honored and relinquished. As a person committed to nonviolence, including the violence of smear campaigns or malicious gossip or whatever, I knew I couldn't act out my hatred. And I think I probably would have been inclined to instead suppress it, deny it, just move on, forgive and forget. Because Psalm 109 happened to visit me in that hour of my pain, I was able to relate to it. The psalmist was giving voice to the pain, the despair, the anger, and the hatred. And in that moment, I didn't really care what my prayer sounded like. I wasn't worried about being nice or being politically correct. I think I was surprised. I still am surprised, maybe, in some ways, that God didn't reject me for the contents of my prayers. I didn't feel bad. Like, I've never felt like there was something wrong about those prayers. That being said, ultimately, these prayers were helping me to relinquish my hatred and desire for retaliation. So while they validated that visceral rage, that visceral desire for vengeance, the call of enemy love keeps me wondering how to move towards forgiveness. What does enemy love look like in this situation, in the face of this ongoing hatred and bitterness? While studying for this capstone, actually just about 6 weeks ago, I discovered a book by David Augsburger. He's a pastoral counselor and theologian. He's got a book called Hate Work. I think the subtitle is The Pleasures and Pain of Hatred. I discovered this book, and this would become the second landmark of my journey towards forgiveness. He has a spectrum of hatred, a continuum, where he describes seven different ways of understanding hatred. And when I saw this, I was able to sort of place what was happening within me. Maybe just briefly, simple hatred, I hate mosquitoes and sunburn, you know. But then spiteful, malicious, retributive hatreds, these become like really pointed, like wishing, hoping for the demise and the destruction of people, holding grudges, delighting in their punishment and their ruin, right? And so I was able to see that was definitely going on in my soul. I definitely had that sort of maliciousness, malicious hatred within me. Principled hatred would be sort of a principled hatred for like clan members. The KKK would have principled hatred. Racism is that kind of hatred, maybe. And then moral hatred and just hatred, that is sort of the vision of the whole scripture and certainly in the Psalms. It helps us to separate immorality and injustice and evil actions and behaviors from the people, from human beings who are created in God's image. And so as we are able to see that this is a person who's broken and fallen and doing these horrible things, we hate the horrible things that they've done, but we are called to love them and called to display an invitation of reconciliation and forgiveness somehow. And that is a journey of I think, probably many months and years. So helping to place and define the hatreds within me was a turning point where I was able to shift, to begin moving in a direction towards just hatred. Augsburger talks about just hatred as a transformation from enmity to empathy to enemy love. Injustice is hated because everything that is at work against God's vision for human flourishing is hated. And the psalmist's pleas for the destruction of the wicked become more intelligible when they're placed on the backdrop of longing. They're longing for the covenantal faithfulness. They're longing for people to see the Torah lived out and all people flourishing in the land. And so when the psalmists are crying out in rage and anger and hatred, it's because people have fallen short of God's vision of Torah, of shalom. Augsburger calls it the mature union of love and hatred. Just hatred can also be likened to grief. It contains deep sadness that injustice and brutality and violence are a part of our human situation. One Holocaust survivor says, "Whenever I think back on the Holocaust, the predominant feeling continues to be that of hurt. It is not anger, lust for revenge, or hatred, but a bitter, inconsolable hurt that such things were done to human beings." So the driving question of my journey has been how to forgive an unrepentant person. As Christians, we wait for the day of Christ for our own healing. We wait in hope for the transformation of our enemies, that they would maybe be encountered with this love and the practice of forgiveness. And I found how much I need the church to help remind me of this reality in the face of my own wounds and the things we've experienced. I need to be reminded that the cross which healed my wounds is wide enough to include the hope that even my enemy can be healed and transformed by the justice and mercy of God. As we live towards that hope, I'm reminded of C.S. Lewis. There's a story that he went to his friend one time and said, "I think I finally forgave somebody after 30 years of praying that I would be able to forgive them." It took him 30 years. So I think that in some ways that's a little discouraging, but it also gives me hope. We can experience our feelings of grief and hatred towards our enemies, but we need to call on our church community to pray for us as victims, but also pray for our perpetrators on our behalf when we're unable to pray for them ourselves. We need the church to be praying for our enemies when we can't pray for them ourselves. My longing for the just reign of Jesus, it grows deeper in the face of violence and darkness and evil. I think this longing includes appropriate hatred for violence and injustice of any kind. It's the acute awareness of our world's need for a savior. I'm still on a journey of forgiveness, but I'm journeying with the help of the psalmists and the support of my church. And I've realized I don't need to choose between hatred and forgiveness, but that Christian love must be sincere. It hates evil in all of its forms. It clings to the hope that all things will one day be redeemed. Thanks be to God. Yeah, I'd be glad to entertain questions. I have a couple planted questions in the audience, so you can go ahead and go first. I'm going to need a drink.
Well, while we're waiting for the planted question.
Yeah.
I'm privileged to read the rest of your capstone. And I was really intrigued by that little study you did in the Psalms with relation to the lectionary. Would you share that with me?
Yeah, good job, Lonnie. That was actually one of the planted questions, and you didn't even realize it. Yeah, so something just had to get cut out of this thing. 17 minutes is such a short time. That's kind of a mean task you guys gave us. My goodness. So along the way, I was really wanting to make the Psalms sort of one of the centerpieces of my presentation, and it just this piece of it had to sort of be cut out of the main presentation. Since there is a few minutes of time, and since you asked, I read through the entire Psalter over Christmas break, and I just made a note of every instance of an imprecatory prayer, a psalm of hatred, these utterances of enmity and anger and hatred, okay? I noted all of these things, and I dumped them into a Word document. It was about 12 pages. And it was about 6,000 words. And I crunched it all into one document. So this is 6,000 words of prayers of hatred in the Psalms. Just to to see that there's about, this is not real scientific or whatever, but by my count, 38 of the Psalms, 38 of 150 Psalms contain this language. And we are a church that follows the Revised Common Lectionary, and I remember realizing that Psalm 109 has not been read in my church in the 6 years I've been going. So why was it missing? And you probably have a guess. It's not actually in the lectionary. But then I was curious. 24 of the 38 Psalms are omitted from the lectionary entirely of my list. And all the ones in the red, all the red is entirely omitted. I want to say they're censored out of the lectionary. So that's maybe a bit trivial or an interesting fact at least. And by word count, it's about almost 90% of the words are completely. And it got to be really frustrating. I noticed that there were times when, maybe two or three verses would say, oh, but for my enemies, may they perish, whatever. That verse was specifically struck out of the lectionary. The paragraphs, the stanzas before and after were in the lectionary, but that one was censored, really. So I thought that was really intriguing. And I think it's especially for people who want to deny those kinds of prayers, this is a really useful and important part of our canon. It's a part of our canon, and they really are instructive for us in these dark hours. All right.